Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dragonheart Book 14, Dwarf City, by Kirill Klavansky, narrated by Kevin T. Collins. Chapter 1218. So, the Emperor knows who I am. Hajar rested his chin on his left hand and moved one of his pieces a couple of squares forward. His knight was now threatening the enemy's bishop. "He does," Chin-Ame replied honestly. His clawed finger twitched slightly, and a pawn moved forward, guided by his will, protecting the bishop. They were sitting on the grass of the central peak of the Magic Dawn Pavilion, and indulging in a game of chess. Frankly, Hajar didn't really like the game. Perhaps his dislike was due to the fact that chess had been a trial that he'd had to pass when he'd met Traves. Or maybe he'd just been too young to find beauty in moving lifeless figures across a black-and-white plane consisting of 64 squares. Now, years later, he'd finally found some meaning in it, especially when chess served as the backdrop to a conversation. "Are you absolutely sure?" A rook slid in, now standing next to that same bishop, adding an extra layer of protection to it. If Hajar still wanted to take the valuable piece, he would have to sacrifice a minor one, his pawn. But it was precisely through such losses and gains that victories were attained. That was something Hajar had learned from Morgan. May his forefathers welcome him with bread and honey. "I heard the Emperor as well as I can hear you right now, Hajar the North Wind." Chin-Ame had made an effort to protect his bishop. It didn't seem to be the most significant piece, but it was currently tied to the game as a whole. The actions of the king, the queen, and the group of pawns. This particular bishop was the door that blocked the inner area of the White Army. Hajar was playing with the Black Army, and the only thing he'd managed to pull off in the past hour was to take some initiative and go on the offensive. "Why do you want my bishop so badly?" the dragon asked suddenly. Hajar explained his reasoning. "That's a good plan," the dragon nodded. "But do you realize that there are far more convenient spots to attack than a well-protected piece that can attack in turn?" Chin-Ame nodded at the pawns in front of the king. Hajar looked at the soldiers who had fallen on the black-and-white battlefield. Of course, their whole game was just a cover that allowed them to take a slightly better look at the current situation and conduct a very sensitive conversation while not fearing that they would be overheard. "You said that the path to the king was blocked." Hajar made another move, which opened the way for further attacks. With this, he was hinting that the secret path to the treasury described in Ash's diary had long since been blocked. It wasn't surprising, given how many years had passed since then. The other secret entrance, which neither the dragons nor the sage Ash had known about, had been destroyed during Ravenswing's escape. And that's how the Raven sect, the fanatical worshippers of the Black General, had managed to screw Hajar over yet again. "It is," Chin-Ame nodded. "However, in big games, Hajar, there are also major tricks you can use." He boldly moved the bishop that had been contested before, opening a way for the enemy rook to assault the back line of the Black Army. Hajar watched in amazement as the until recently trapped bishop bravely attacked his queen, which he couldn't move lest he put his king in mortal danger. "While you thought you were setting up a trap or going on the offensive, you were actually following someone else's plan. Always remember, Hajar the North Wind, that you may not be the king, but just a pawn, one of many, which, of course, can go all the way to the other end of the board and become a queen, which can then still be sacrificed the moment it becomes useful to do so. Hajar had to take the bishop with his second knight, which was taken by Chin Ameh's own knight in turn, then it was taken by Hajar's pawn, which was taken by Chin Ameh's queen right after. That was how Hajar lost the advantage, the initiative, and went from a bold attack to a panicked defense. All this time he'd thought he was following his own plan, while he had actually been walking down a path that had been determined for him. Morgan, the Dragon Emperor, Helmer, Freya, Dirger, the Jasper Emperor, they were all playing their own games, ones in which Hajar was just a pawn that would be sacrificed to protect something more valuable, but they wouldn't mind turning him into a queen, so that they could sacrifice him later for a greater profit. "Fucking schemes," Hajar hissed, and turned away from the chessboard. The delegation was gathering below the Magic Dawn Pavilion, not because it was a special sight these days, but because once upon a time Chin Ameh's daughter and Traves had set off to the Ruby Mountains from here. "There's only one way to win this game," Chin Ameh continued suddenly. "By not playing?" Hajar chuckled sadly. "I tried, wise dragon. By the high heavens I tried, and it would cost me far more than I'm ready to pay." Hajar touched the wedding bracelet on his wrist. It still smelled like her, and gave off her warmth. "You can't afford to not play." Chin Ameh picked up a pawn and twirled it in his fingers. He stared at it as if it contained all the wisdom that he had accumulated over hundreds of eons. He was an aging dragon whose time was coming to an end. How long did he have left? 20,000 years? By the standards of most, it was still a ridiculous amount of time. "But if you can't beat your opponent, try this," Chin Ameh said thoughtfully. He took one of the bowls, shook out the pieces inside, and, turning it over, placed it next to the chessboard, after which he placed a white pawn on top of it. "What's that?" Hajar asked. "The 65th square," the dragon explained. "The one that can't be reached." "It looks more like a prison," Hajar said, raising an eyebrow skeptically. Chin Ameh glanced at the forces gathering at the foot of the hill. The younger a creature, the more often they get captivity and freedom mixed up. "Is it even possible to get polar opposites mixed up?" "If you switch concepts," Chin Ameh nodded. "What most people take for freedom is really just a shackle that feels good to be in, and only by breaking these shackles can you become truly free." Hajar sighed a little wearily. "The 65th square means performing actions that are unexpected, the ones the game itself doesn't allow for normally. Think about that when you're fighting for the princess's life." Hajar looked at the beautiful girl wearing flowing silks who was coming up in a cart that floated through the clouds, drawn by pink, six-winged birds. "Do you think, wise Chin Ameh, that the delegation will encounter many dangers?" "Why do you think the emperor is sending such an impressive army with his daughter?" The army really was astonishingly powerful. Chapter 1219. When a bugle sounded, Hajar left the Magic Dawn Pavilion, turning into a white lightning bolt to do so. Piercing the clouds of magical smoke formed from the incense and leaving behind a silhouette that looked like a dragon spreading its wings, he appeared at the head of the procession. the long column of people, or rather dragons, which stretched out for several miles, brought back memories of Rahaim's caravan and the Sea of Sand. Admittedly, the dragon procession was far more magnificent and somewhat pompous compared to the caravan. The rear guard, which consisted of a dozen riders, trailed after the procession. The warriors were wearing turquoise robes of incredible quality that probably cost a fortune, along with amulets around their necks, imperial-level armor, and weapons of medium quality. Most of them were armed with spears. The ones not armed with spears held a variety of armaments, from simple infantry weapons all the way to a kind of broadsword attached to a pole. Such weapons were so heavy that it was hard to guess how the dragon's mounts could handle their weight with such apparent ease. The princess's entire entourage of guards, including the rear guard, the main forces, and the vanguard, were mounted, riding huge, three-tailed tigers with strange greenish fur and crimson stripes. The monsters varied in power, ranging from the initial level of the primeval stage to the mid-level spirit stage. Hajar hadn't really understood why the dragons didn't travel in their true forms, as they could reach a speed that not even the engineers who'd made the fury of the mortal skies could dream of imitating. Chin Ame had explained that once a dragon advanced to a certain stage of cultivation, it was easier for them to stay in human form. Their dragon form was then used only in extreme cases, like during a fight, special training, or meditation. Walking ahead of the rear guard were numerous servants, tailors, cooks, artisans, potters, builders, and other representatives of the lower class made up their ranks. In total, there were about 300 of them. Among them were lords and peak-stage spirit knights, which demonstrated a high level of cultivation in the dragon lands, but the average level or stage wasn't as monstrous as it might have seemed back at the Ruby Palace. The servants, unlike the warriors, didn't ride tigers, but traveled in some kind of lavish, spacious stagecoach pulled by magic clouds. Then came the 2,226 dragon warriors. There were also 20 mages mixed in with them, and all of them were either former or current disciples of Chin Ame and his pavilion. They were easy to tell apart from the regular warriors, as they carried no martial weapons. Their leader was holding a staff, covered in runes and symbols that must have been very expensive in his clawed hands. He looked at those around him as if they were little more than dust that might sully his fancy pointed shoes. Every mage rode on their own personal cloud, which covered their legs up to the knees. Next up was the princess's own carriage. Hajar had rubbed his eyes in disbelief at the sight of a stone building resting on the clouds. It was made of magical marble, adorned with three picturesque stained-glass windows, as tall as a two-story house and as wide as the deck of a galleon. It was like a miniature version of the palace. The princess and her two personal maids traveled inside of it. The carriage was guarded by the head of this parade of magic and luxury, Officer Sin Magan, the older brother of the mad swordswoman Tash Magan, the one who'd tried to take the place of the hero in the delegation of the Ruby and the Dragon. And now she most likely hated Hajar, who, because he'd been unable to defeat Tash in a fair fight, had resorted to a very dishonest trick in order to beat her. Unlike his subordinates, Sin rode a five-tailed tiger. It was larger, scarred, more muscular, and had a sharp, calculating glare. It was a mid-level spirit beast, equal in power to a peak-stage nameless. Sin exuded the distinct aura of an initial-stage heaven emperor, definitely a dragon to watch out for. Hero Hajar of the North Wind tribe, Officer Sin Magan greeted him with a nod. He stowed the old bugle back in his saddlebags. Come, let Sashkem sniff you. Sashkem was obviously the name of the dragon's tiger. While it might have sounded a little wild, dragons riding on tigers, in the nameless world, there were far more amazing things than that. Hajar reluctantly stepped forward. The tiger's snout, which was the size of a boulder, not to mention the fact his fangs were as big as sabers, moved toward him, and the beast sniffed him. Hajar kept his hands away from the handle of his scarlet blade. His stance showed a casual lack of concern, even though he was ready to fight to the death if anything did happen. The tiger might potentially smell the human part of him. After a few moments, Sashkem straightened his neck, turned to his rider, and gave a short growl. "My old friend, you're right, as always," Sin said with a slightly wry smile, not because he had a bad temper or anything, but because half his face was hidden behind a steel mask, and deep scars peeked out from beneath it. By the high heavens, Hajar easily recognized whose blade had inflicted them. Raven's Wing. What a busy life you led. "Well, I'm glad to welcome the hero into our ranks," Sin held out his hand. Given that he was several feet up, Hajar had to use his energy and will to rise up into the air and shake the offered forearm. "You'll be under my command for the next 2 years. You have one task: protect the princess. Do so in a manner that doesn't prevent me from taking care of my fellow citizens, and we won't have any problems. Maybe this'll even be the start of a great friendship." "I serve the high heavens," Hajar replied with a phrase he'd been taught. "May they extend over your wings," Sin said in turn. "Now go and get the wreath. We'll be leaving soon. 2 years isn't a lot of time, considering the distance we have to cover." 2 years of traveling at speeds that no mortal or practitioner would ever be able to comprehend. The nameless world was large, and, as Hajar had learned long ago, it wasn't a normal planet at all. It was something different. However, at the moment, he was more concerned with the gaze of the mage holding the staff. It was less than friendly. Fucking schemes. Chapter 1220. What was a single month to beings that lived for thousands of years? Probably what an hour was to mortals. And a year? Probably the equivalent of a day or so. In light of that, it wasn't surprising that the delegation felt more like a casual stroll rather than an important and dangerous event. The guards were from the Magan family. As Hajar had learned over the past month, the Magans were famous for their skills with weapons. As it turned out, the ability to walk the path of weapons or magic was considered a great gift for dragons. Even though the guards ranged from peak stage lords to advanced stage nameless, only a few of them possessed a true kingdom. The mages were from the Min family, the same family as the mentor, whom Hajar had almost sent to his forefathers. Once upon a time, the Ameh family had been the one that held undisputed power in the Magic Dawn Pavilion, but over the course of the war for the throne and the rise of the current emperor, many of them had died. Others still had gone to the Strange Lands. Mages were always drawn to knowledge and secrets, so the only ones left had been Chin Ameh and his daughter, the heir to the title of Pavilion Head, which she hadn't been able to inherit. She'd been born incapable of following neither the path of weapons nor harnessing the words. This sometimes happened with dragons, as cultivation was hundreds of times more difficult for them than it was for humans. In their true forms, they often couldn't reach higher stages simply because they didn't have enough food to do so. Animals not only needed to fight for territory, but also the ability to hunt and grow. After his daughter had left with Traves, and subsequently died at the hands of the Emperor's men, Chin Ame had been left completely alone. His last living relative, Minister Ju, had died at his own hands. How had Ajar learned all of this? Well, there was absolutely nothing to do during their travel, which had its advantages. Chatting with the servants was quite easy and didn't arouse any suspicion, for example. At the moment, Ajar was sitting at a table with some of the servants. They were on the platform that was floating on clouds a dozen feet above the ground, and traveling at a speed that made the forest look like a blurry, shapeless, gray-green mass as it whipped past them.
"I never thought I'd pass the exam to become a cook," a plump young man sighed.
He had no horns or vertical pupils. His appearance definitely meant he would be mistaken for a human. He was a dragon from the Curved Horn tribe.
"I don't believe you, Pan," a tall man wearing glasses replied.
Actual glasses. Ajar had choked in shock when he'd first seen them.
"Your cooking skills are known even in the Ruby Palace. I wouldn't be surprised if you were given mid-mountain lands when we get back."
Pan, the fat and kind young cook, closed his eyes dreamily.
"I really hope that comes true."
The other guy, whose name was Shins, was also a commoner. He'd been able to pass the official accounting exam. That was why, at the moment, the commoner Shins was one of the most prominent faces of the delegation. He alone knew all the details regarding their provisions, ammunition, and other vital numbers inherent to such a large-scale enterprise. Unsurprisingly, he was often visited by the head of the guard and the leader of the delegation, Sin Magan. Considering that there were a decent number of young and beautiful women amongst the servants, this created a nice atmosphere. Even now, in the common area that was technically the servants' cantina, there were several charming dragonesses seated across from Pan, Shins, and Ajar. They were smiling and kept trying to catch the eye of the trio.
"I'd move my mother and brothers there," Pan continued dreamily, "and build a house, grow a garden, maybe even open a restaurant."
"Do you really want to continue cooking, even after you get a trade permit?"
Shins asked him, adjusting his glasses.
"That's a little strange, my friend."
"Why? I like cooking. You know, mixing the ingredients, producing something new and unique."
"Yeah, and being the servant of those who never do anything."
Shins glanced at the Magan warriors riding in front of them. Their green tigers raced along the cloud roads ahead, which were being created by the mages as they went. Their word magic was keeping the delegation in the air, allowing it to travel at its current insane speed.
"What's wrong with serving your fellow countrymen?" Pan persisted.
"And taking their praise along with an extra drop after they eat their dinner."
Pan pouted and crossed his arms over his chest.
"There's no better praise for a cook than satisfied and well-fed guests."
"Please, someone, anyone," Shins turned to the giggling girls, "give this dragon some white scales. I think he might be a saint."
"Shins, stop it," Pan pleaded.
The plump cook was awkward around the ladies.
"You'll be given some land in the Middle Mountains, too. What do you plan to do with it?"
"I'll trade with the Red Phoenix and the Human Empires," the accountant blurted out. I'll earn enough money and influence to marry the daughter of some impoverished nobleman and rise above the cloud so that no highborn who can't even calculate the root of a 5-digit number will ever look at me like a worthless bug again."
Shins once more adjusted his glasses, his sharp green eyes glinting behind them.
"And you, Hero Hajar?" One of the maids suddenly turned to Hajar. "What will you do when you return with the princess?"
"He'll probably join the Magan family," Shins said confidently. "Didn't you notice how Officer Sin Magan is constantly inviting him to join his warriors at the table? The Magan would never miss the opportunity to recruit someone who managed to cut through Tosh's helmet and..."
"Hajar, the North Wind," a voice came from behind them. For the first time in a long time, Hajar was completely surprised. It had been a while since anyone had been able to get behind him unnoticed.
"Sage Shiak Min,"
the servants immediately rose and bowed. Hajar also stood up. He'd known that the haughty leader of the mages would try and talk to him sooner or later. Chapter 1221. Most mages that Hajar had met were of advanced age. They also tended to look as if they were forcing themselves to converse with a pile of talking dung whenever they talked to pretty much anyone except other mages. Hajar didn't like mages. They always caused problems. Shiak Min was no exception. He was younger than Chin Ame, but still quite old. Just enough to have grays in his overripe, cherry-colored hair, and bumps and cracks in his branching horns. These were all signs that he was approaching old age. The head of the mages of the Ruby and the Dragon delegation was wearing valuable magical robes that shimmered like the stars and the moon. His staff, etched with runes and symbols, was standing in the corner of his spacious tent. He was sitting on some pillows and holding a hookah.
"Do you want some?"
he offered the mouthpiece to his guest without any formality or respect.
"I beg your pardon, wise Shiak Min,"
Hajar bowed, still on his feet.
"I prefer pipes."
He showed the dragon his old pipe. It was the last memento of his distant past.
"As you wish," the mage pointed to the pillows in front of him.
"Sit." Hajar nodded in a restrained, grateful way, and sank down onto the softest pillows that his ass had ever felt. Such luxury simply didn't exist in the Seven Empires. That applied to everything that was in the tent. There were entire racks of books and scrolls, some artifacts, and a lot of papers lying on the floor, which was also covered in skins, maps, and strange devices, the purpose and value of which Hajar couldn't even begin to guess at. Shiak Min smoked in silence for a while, staring at the hero he'd invited into his tent. Hajar did the same. The dragon exuded the aura of an initial stage heaven emperor, which meant he was only one stage weaker than Chin Ame.
"My younger brother spoke very poorly of you," the mage said suddenly, exhaling smoke.
He waved his hand, and the smoke took on the form of Shi Min. Well, given the relatively small number of dragons in general, and dragon mages in particular, especially strong mages, this coincidence was anything but at this point.
"You aren't making any excuses," Shiak Min continued after a short pause. "That makes you either brave or stupid."
Hajar remained silent and just smoked his pipe, enjoying the tobacco from the plantations along the south of the Seven Empires. "After he told me his story, I wondered how a commoner could possibly know Chin Ame." His amber eyes flashed with an evil light, but Hajar wasn't afraid.
He wouldn't be a match for a true words mage at the Heaven Emperor level. However, he had confidence in his ability to escape. We traveled together for a short time, Hajar answered truthfully. Any cultivator who reached such a high level would be a
sample complete. Ready to continue?